This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
Okay. So we're holding a Perek Beis. Perek Beis Madlikin. Ezo Oshir. Kol Sheyesh Nachas Ruach Be'oishroi. The Rav Meir. So Rav Meir says, Rav Meir Nachas Ruach. Reb Tavma says, Kol Sheyesh Le Kuf Kramim Be'kuf Sarez Be'kuf Avarim Shaitim Bahem. Rav Akiva says, Kol Sheyesh Le Isha Noah Be'maser. Rav Yosef Me Kol Sheyesh Le Beis Akiz Yisom Shulchonik. So we have a kind of a broad range of different definitions of what Asher is. And it's sort of interesting what's all about. What are all these things shaft Aisha? Vieshkal Adas, Kikol Elo Achachomim Haskoma Achas Lehem. He says the first point is they're all dealing with one Nekuda. But in general, Chalal Gadol, that if a group of people are saying things that have no shaykhs with each other, imagine you have like a bunch of dots scattered on a graph with no line going through them, those dots are not really meaningful in any way. There's no common denominator. So it has to be something. We have such divergent opinions. It's like you throw out a question, everybody has a different answer. But there's one nekuda that goes through all of it, and there's different expressions of that. The basic mechanism of Ashirus is that a person has a lack, and that lack is fulfilled with the Ashirus. Before the person had Ashirus, he was missing something, and the Ashirus means that he's not missing. The word Nachas Ruach comes from the word nachas, which means to rest, to sort of come to peace, to tranquility. A person who has nachas ruach means that the person feels content with what he has. So it's not so much, we usually interpret nachas, when somebody says nachas from a child, we assume it to be like the child is doing something extraordinary feat that he's very proud of. I guess we'd use the word English proud. That's not quite the accurate translation. The accurate translation is a person is very apprehensive about his child, what's going to be, what's he going to do, how's he going to make it, and so on and so forth. And then when the person sees him being matzliach, more than the first emotion is to be to have his worries allayed. Baruch Hashem, he's doing the right things, he's making it, things are going well. That's the inner sense of Nachas Ruach. So he says, Rav Meir says, I don't need to go into specifics. If the person's Ashiras is not allowing him, it doesn't give him a sense of ease or contentment, then it's not, then there's no point to it, then it's not Ashiras. He's still a chassid. The person's still worried, still apprehensive. He's still not satisfied. So nachas ruach is the general sense of what Ashiras is. So if the person is not happy, is not satisfied, then he doesn't have birchas ha'isha. I think I was told of there was a fellow who came to visit us. He was a very wealthy jeweler from Switzerland, and one of my brother-in-laws was sitting there, happened to be sitting there, and many years ago, and they got into conversation, and my brother-in-law teased him something about his wealth or something like that, and the person answered tefillin seriously, he said, listen, he said, it's Erev Yom Tov, it was like a week before Pesach. Your wife wants a piece of jewelry of $500, and you're racking your brains to figure out how you're going to get $500 to get her the jewelry she would like to have. Said, my wife wants a piece of jewelry for $50,000, and I'm racking my brains to figure out how to get a piece of jewelry for $50,000. So let me ask you, is there any real difference between us two? We're both racking our brains out. The difference of which piece of jewelry it's about, does it really make a difference? And it was interesting, if at the end of it, it's your emotional state of things, then what difference does it make? So if a person does not have nachas ruach ba'ashro, the einoy chaset tamid, and he's always missing something, he still feels, doesn't feel good, doesn't feel I have what I need, and I'm happy with that, then he doesn't have the bracha of Oisha. Because it's Oisha is not about the thing, it's about your reaction, it's about your sense of the thing. So the first thing he says is Ashiras is midas estapkus, midas estapkus in the sense of feeling quite complete and quite good with what he has. I think it's important to emotionally separate what we would call ascetism from istapkus b'mur. The connotation, the sense in which we pick up the word ascetic is that the person feels deprived, but he sort of, I guess, lives off his deprivation. I guess imagine, let's say somebody needs to, let's take a person who's dieting. He needs to diet because he needs to lose a lot of weight for his health or whatever. And he's really, really not eating much, and he has this hunger gnawing in his stomach. And sometimes he feels a thrill, like he feels that hunger gnawing in his stomach is the process of losing the weight that he needs to. So the person has a painful sensation, an unpleasant sensation, but in some perverse way, he gets hanoah from it. The same thing is true. A person who's an ascetic somehow seems to enjoy the deprivation, and there are many different angles in that, and not all of them very healthy or wholesome. There's a famous verse from Rabbi Isaac Sher, Gevalde Gevart. It says by Avshalom, David's son, in one medrash it says he was a Ben Sora Morer, and it also says he was a Nazir, because that's where they had his long hair from. Ben Sora Mora is somebody who's a glutton and you know, drinks a lot of, he stole wine, drank wine, meat, and so on. And another is someone that abstains. So how do you understand the sense of Medrash that he was a Ben Sora Mora when it says clearly he was a Nazi, had long hair? So Rabbi Isaac Sher said, in Yiddish it goes much better, I'll translate it. He said, Auf like fressen tanesen. He used to glutton, he used to fress tanese. In other words, his input, the emotional input of his tanesim was what food was doing to a glutton. That's what the tanese was doing to him. He was kind of proud of himself and very, very caught up with himself. It was feeding a very different angle of his personality. That was the way he described it. So the what we call ascetism is not always a healthy input. Histapkus means the person really doesn't need. It's like people who you know, they eat what they need and they don't indulge. So they're not walking around hungry. They're not walking around feeling, you know, sort of having this sense of not eating enough and feeling good or proud or whatever it is. They just don't have much needs, and that's it. You know, they're full with less. Histapkus means that the person is satisfied, and therefore that's real ashirus. One. Omner Reb Tarfon einir le'davzer. Afal gav shevadi midal yoni himoid. Yes.
So just this term comes up all the time about kabbanis. What would it mean by Rabbi Shaida? The korban creates a nachas ruach.
Correct. Well, the nachas ruach. We speak. The a carbon is usually brought as a kapara, even if there's no active aveira. It's sort of a maratza, a mechaper. It's because the person. Let's take an example. When it's a maratza and a kapara, we all understand it. Obviously, in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, quote unquote, angry with us, upset with us. We had done wrong, and this sort of is a calming down. It's a, you know, this anger or whatever it is. But even in a carbon like Adam Arishon, like Cain and Hevel, that was after the Chet. But let's take a carbon Tomit. So there's one element of kapara, because people are always messing up and they need to kapara, that's fine. But there's a second element, and that is, imagine a person's child moves out of the house. They get married and they move on. Or they go away to yeshiva or whatever. So when the child calls up and says hello, so there doesn't have to be... It was not preceded by a fight of any type. But the very fact that they've moved away in itself creates a richuk. Imagine your child goes off to yeshiva, gets married, and doesn't call. So basically he's saying, my distancing myself from you is for good. It's you know, I've pulled away from you and I'm gone. When he calls up to touch base, he's basically saying, I miss you. It's still the same. So every richuk, every hisrachus, creates a certain tension of not chet, I would call it, but a distancing. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, even in our most pristine form, without avera, but we left. Becoming Bali Bechira is an act of moving on and leaving. And we are automatically making a statement that we've left and we're distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu by the very fact that we're away. When a person brings a carbon, Miloshen Kiruv, so the person is sort of countering that distancing and saying, we may be far in some way, but I'm reconfirming my Kesher. So it's a nachas ruach in the sense, not we've added HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we have mitigated our distancing ourselves from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the nachas ruach is. That's the sense of it. I want to share a story about, you know, we're talking about if an usher does not have his nachas ruach, is it any different than ani and usher? I want to share another story that was made a very big impression on me. There was one of our talmidim yeshiva, was a very very brilliant boy, very very sensitive person, really really a person with very special qualities. I mean, he's in his 30s now, he's married, two children. He was at the time, I mean, today he's, you know, he's in Kodesh, but at the time he was taking psychology and for some internship he was working in a center that rehabilitated people that had gone up the skid row. The people that had been successful had some major crisis in their lives that forced them to drugs, drinking, copping out some way, and it's not easy, especially if they're very successful, you know, they rehabilitate. And he was working on the last leg of getting the people back in society, helping them readjust again, and so on. That was the internship for care for a psych major. And he called me up once a summer. He said he needed to share something with me. He said there was a person there in the in his unit who had been a highly, highly successful CEO of a company, had been, I don't know what crisis happened, but basically, I think he took to drinking in a very severe way, lost his wife, his children would have nothing to do with him, money, everything, his entire, all of his accomplishments and everything he was gone. I don't know how long you've been in this unit. It's been quite a time, obviously. You've been on for a long time in a bad way. And he was now, had been rehabilitated, and was ready to move back. And he was facing his first job interview at Wendy's. Wendy's is like McDonald's. It's a cheap, low-end burger place where they give you $5.35 an hour for dishing out, French fries and burgers. And he was very, very nervous about the job interview. And it was the job of my student and someone else to sort of calm him and give him the confidence and so on and so forth. And I told him, no, Jim, you can do it. You'll do it. It'll be okay. And the nurse and the woman with him told him, you'll see, I'm going to walk into Wendy's and I'm going to wink at you and you're going to give me a few extra fries because I know you can do it and you're going to do it. And so I'm very, very nervous and I don't know if they will take me and don't worry, you'll ace it and so on and so forth. It was a very, for this Talmud of mine, who was a very big Baal Nefesh, it was an experience, an emotional experience, to see somebody who had been a powerful executive and was frightened to becoming a French fry kid in Wendy's. Then he said to himself, emotionally speaking, what difference was it to the person when he was biting his nails to get the job as CEO or to make the acquisition or whatever was going on in the company? To getting his job to Wendy's, I mean the difference are numbers on a piece of paper, but in the person, the same nervous when the guy at Wendy's tells him you're in, Buster, he's going to be as happy as then. Is there a difference? Like he really, it was something that he mulled over. You know, what difference is there? It's a very, very fascinating, but certainly the ashirus of someone who has no nachas ruach from a jayisha is meaningless. Okay, one. Then he says, "Amnon, Reb Tarfa ain't here to do this. Avagash shabad emilia rehimoi kasheyesh anachas ruach b'asher v'midas heistapkus hashabar nemidazois mikol mukayim ha'oishah be'atzmoi u'kasheh nos nashen pachalov kinyan ha'oishah." In other words, you can't just say that the ashiras lies in having all needs met. If you need to feel that you have something, and you need to have something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you. It's not your natural set, but it's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm not sure which of the two points is the more important. He sort of says both points in Maral. But then he says, he needs to have some sort of simen. He's saying there's two things. There's having something, there needs to be something tangible. But he also needs to understand that this is Birchas Hashem. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him something. And the way in which he perceives it is through the number of Kuf. Doesn't explain much why it's like that. He speaks in different places about Asa b'shvilchetis asher, that Meiser and Ashirus have the same word, and over there he speaks about the chelik within the nechasim that belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to, here he's going the opposite direction. The Ashirus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midos come in complements of 10. So, tenfold, one-tenth, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu has 10 midos, 10 spheres, and therefore, whatever I get min HaShemayim has all 10 midos. Let's take it in a different context. whenever you have kolchos in the Bria that have specific kolchos, if they don't have all 10 kolchos, they don't represent a Kadosh Baruch Hu, they represent some aspect. So each midah is one of 10, and only a Kadosh Baruch Hu is the entirety of 10. In the way that Klal Yisrael, when you have 10 people, each one is a different Nekud in Klal Yisrael. It's only when you have all 10 that you have a Metzias that's Kula Kadosh Baruch Hu. So a Metzias that is a Kadosh Baruch Hu is 10 units in one package. If things go well for a person, things are coming. The sense that it's not Kadosh Baruch Hu is when it comes with an entire complement, so when I have something that's expressed in all the midas, there is going to be. That's why when you have 10 makas, it's Yad Hashem, because each maka has its own kochos, and you can attribute it to something. Moshe Mar David Deima. Let's say you have a very, very large company. Now, any directive issued by a department head will affect only that department. So let's say 2, 3, 4, 5 department heads have decided to make some day, I don't know, a holiday for the workers or a special, or the other way around, they have to come in or whatever it is. We understand it in terms of department heads. The only way we're sure it's not is when every single person from A to Z has the same directive coming to him, then we say this must come from the top, because it's affected from big to small, that's where it's coming. So the Ani Hashem of the Aseres HaMakis is a simin that's coming milamala, because it's the entire complement of different things in the Bria, whether it's connected to Asar Mamaris, Megasar Spheres, all of them, the entirety of it is what gives away the Asar Mamaris Baruch Hu. So if a person has tens, and I'm not sure how to translate this in practical currency. I don't know if it's $10,000 or $10 million or $10 billion. I don't know what ten, but what it means to say is I deherit it 10. Now, the nature of Akadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhagos is that the 10 is a never ending cycle of tens. In other words, 10 is not because it's 10 items. 10 means it's the fullness of it. So these 10, like we're now in the Sefiras Omer and we count sevens, but we always, we there's Chesed and Gvur and Teferes, and there's Chesed Shebe Chesed, Chesed Shebe Gvur, and Chesed Shebe Teferes, and so on. These Hanhagos are constantly, they keep reinforcing themselves. And therefore he says, that this is what it was over here, that it was, it reinforced itself constantly until, so having 100 means the bracha itself is mizbarech. It's sort of an assurance that it's not just a mikra that all ten, that he got 10 items, but rather it's an entire mahalach together of tens. That's more or less the meaning of what he means. Then he says, "Omnam Rebbe Kiva loynir leloy mashi nikra osh mishal kufsas kuvavodim oibdim kein adava zech shivas klal umaze nechshav." So he says these are very external. In other words, when we're talking about a person having, it's not enough to say I have. It has to be something that's very significant. So if I happen to have, I don't know, pistachio nuts, so what? You know. So in other words, an isha is a kinyan. The sense, and people make a mistake. The word kinyan here doesn't mean possession in the sense, in the legal sense. Okay, that's not the whole point of it. It means it's a kinyan in the sense of feeling that I have gained something. You know, a person was missing a mate, and now he has one. A person is missing a huge part of his life, a whole dimension of his life, and having a wife, he has one. So this is a much closer kinyan, because the nature of kinyanim that are physical, and on that it says the la yosef etzev, kinyanim that a person possesses that are physical possessions, a person sits around and worries he may lose them. Holding on to large estate is something a person down deep is worried about. A wife, I mean, don't live forever, but a person doesn't see it that way. A person drew a simcha. So therefore, so it's a much more powerful sense of Ashiras. Rabbi Yosi lebocha b'dasa meir tafma shegarashim. V'gam b'dasa v'akiva lebocha shetikra isha oisha. Yes. So in the bigger picture, where the picture of Ish and Isha, and the Isha was taken from the Ish, and Ke'ilu, that's the piece that was taken out of that, so the relationship would be, just like in terms of Anhaga, we expect the man to in everything, and to earn the money, to work the field, to set the tone in Ruchnius, and the woman is the one who complements it, the man's efforts on his own. Like the Chazal say, if he would have to bring home wheat, they would have to eat cream of wheat every night, and it's the wife who actually is able to make something very edible out of it. So this is true in Ruchnius, everything. The woman is sort of being mashlim, the man's asiya. So the perspective would be that, certainly emotionally, man is a hashlam of a woman, from the woman's point of view. But in the big picture of a family, it's as if the man is the bulk material, and the woman is the hashlam to it. The Rabbi Yosi lebocha dasa meir tavnish garashnu, v'gam b'dasa v'akiva lebocha shetikra isha oisha, ki av sheisha kinyan shegar nasu lebal. It's still kinyan ze efshe stalik man. So it's something where you can't say the person has it, because you know it's possible you shouldn't have a chashom. Let's discuss this a little bit first, and then we'll talk about it. We need to understand that the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created our guf at its most physical level is parallel to a much deeper interaction with, a much deeper level, much deeper ruchniistic level. And on every level, it's going to be very similar. A person needs food, and he ingests food. The food that he brings into his body contains life-giving substances, and it contains things that are not good for the body. Not necessary, not good, take up space, etc. As long as that's in the body has a problem with it. And that's why the body is not comfortable with it. The body, when the body succeeds in ridding itself of that, the body is comfortable because it's gotten rid of the waste and the poison and the excess, and now it has itself. So what makes, what allows for the guf to be a davar shalom is the ability to purge the things that are bad for it, that are detrimental for the body. So let's go two steps. The first kinyan that a person has is his guf. And even though the guf also dies, everybody's personal guf dies, but a person doesn't think that way. A person doesn't actually feel that, you know, I mean, we sort of, I guess, fantasize that when we go up to Shemayim, we're somehow going to have the guf with us. We know it's not true, but we don't picture that. So there's no sense of my neshama will be seeing my guf. A person fears death because it's the unknown. He fears death for someone who's not a maimon. He's going to lose his guf. He's going to lose his neshama also. I mean, if a person's not a maimon. But if we are a maimon, we sort of see that. But our problem with our guf is because of the internal issues and impurities of the guf that make a lack of, what's the right word for it, a lack of nachas ruach from the guf, because the guf is dealing with its own issues. So he says, and the musa guf nak is on many, many levels. It's just like a person who struggles with yitzhara. It means I'm doing good things. I'm you know, there's a lot of tov going on, but I'm having a hard time dealing with the nekudas of ra. There's no, you know, it's part of it, and as long as I have issues inside, they're going to struggle and create problems. In other words, the purification of a person is a sense of Olam Haba. The tranquility that we have in Olam Haba is first and foremost due to the fact that we're shleimus. So long as a person is in this world and he has in himself different elements to his personality, he's not tranquil. So he's doing toiv, but there's all sorts of other things going on. Olam Haba is a place where that's over. And he doesn't have the kas, he doesn't have the sinne, he doesn't have the kinna, he doesn't have the taiva. So he's a tranquil. So a person who has Besakisa, and Besakisa means every level. A person who's, let's imagine, we could translate the following. Every person grows up with different emotional issues. Some of it, that's why he's born. Some of it, he grew up like that, his parents. Some of it, society around him. And, you know, some of it, just the pains of growing up. A person who doesn't know how to deal with it, it remains troubled by it. He doesn't know how to get rid of it, and he's constant turmoil. The person who understands how to get rid of it, he's able to eliminate it in every sense of the word. He's tranquil. It's Olam Haba is Koras Ruach, the sense of tranquility, of well-being. When a person is able to get rid of that which is not part of him, he's gotten rid of the internal issues. This word should be Ki Hatsoya. I'm pretty sure it's a mistake. He misnagged Adam because his sulik zemen Adam may be a Adam nachzuach beyosef. Vehu nikra oisha shne mistalik men shleshu guf naki. So it's the type of things that it's interesting. We derive a certain sense. Imagine a person who has worked hard and he's very sweaty and smelly and dirty, and he's uncomfortable. And then when he takes a shower, the tain of it is that he's not uncomfortable. Like, a person is bothered by dirt or odors or things that stick to his body because if this is part of me and I don't want it to be part of me, and there's certain nachas ruach when a person has cleaned himself. So the bottom line over here is that a person's ashirus needs to translate itself to some sort of nachas ruach, and the question of ezo osher was. Everybody agreed. In other words, the common denominator was we're looking for somebody to give a person a sense of well-being, and it's in each one. So Ezer Shesh and Nachas Ruach for sure is a more holistic thing, but we're dealing with just general things. Reb Tarfon said he needs to have things that he senses it's Matnas Alekim, that it's a Nachas Ruach from Kodesh Baruch Hu. The truth is, a person needs to understand, since we believe and we have an interaction with Kodesh Baruch Hu, sometimes we give him things, but we have a sense, you know, it's not for a good reason. When the person feels that it's matnas Hashem, that Kodesh Baruch Hu is giving it because he likes him, then it's going to, that's nechaz ruach. Rabbi Akiva says, no matter what, it needs to be something that's part of him, not something that's extraneous, and that's why it's Ishlo Maser. And Rabbi Yossi says, at the end of the day, that which is closest to the person is the person himself, and the thing that he needs to deal with, the things that the person needs to get rid of, once he succeeds in getting rid of what's antagonistic to the body, and what's detrimental to the body, to the nefesh, and so on, then he has a fine sense of nachas ruach. Any questions?
Yeah. Rabbi, all these things.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, for all these things, for a person to be content with them, maybe not the last one, but one would have to have a midah of betochen, because no one is guaranteed. I mean, you could have for today if you got them, but no one's guaranteed. If he has something, he's not going to lose it. And if he hasn't got it, he's not guaranteed he's going to get it. So, why isn't the talui on bitachin seemingly?
Well, bitachin is sort of, bitachin is the insurance policy. It's that I'm going to have, if I have a very, very nice car, I'm happy first and foremost because it's a very, very nice car. I also want an insurance policy to make sure I don't lose it. But I can't say I'm thrilled with my car. It may be a 1985 Fiat, but the insurance on it is fantastic. I mean, in this sense, the Midas of Bitachon is just describing how certain am I that I'm holding on to it. Certainly a person who's on edge and always thinks they're going to lose it, they'll be happy. But what's the etzem thing you're happy with? I need to define that, and that's what he's defining over here. Okay, so Mitzvah Hashem next week again, same time. Okay, good Shabbos.
Ishkach Rabbah, Lafiansky.
Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos. Bye.